started.
Hi, welcome to a podcast of one's own, episode number, we will put it in the show notes. I'm Sky, this is Kara.
Hi.
And today, we are going to be talking about Orange is the New Black. But before we talk about Orange is the New Black, we would like to open with our Living as a Feminist question of the week, which related to Orange is the New Black. Well, okay, let me explain and start again. I really miss Kate. Kate's not here today, everyone.
You're doing a great job so far.
Thanks. Well, you know, I'm trying to channel her. Okay, so if you remember in Orange is the New Black, Piper is in, it opens with Piper in a heterosexual relationship engaged to a man, but she has kind of a queer history. So we were wondering, basically, how you can negotiate those identities when you are have a queer history or you are queer. And basically, if you are in a heterosexual relationship, does that make you heterosexual? Why or why not, basically? Kara?
Great question.
Over to you.
I think it's interesting because I think that there's a way to understand sexuality as, like, temporal zones of, like, whatever you are in the present. But also, I'm saying that as someone who hasn't, like, strongly identified as, like, queer or gay or lesbian or straight, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so it's kind of coming from a specific perspective because, you know, identities in those kind of identity categories have been culturally very significant.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't want to say that it is temporary, because it isn't temporary for a lot of people. Or in flux.
Yeah.
Or based on just current relationships, you know what I mean? Because there is more of, more to it than a relationship that you're in. Like, I'm sure maybe people can still be gay and not in a relationship.
Absolutely. I think that's a really good example. Yeah, I definitely don't think that being in a heterosexual relationship makes you heterosexual per se, though I do think that those are complicated politics to negotiate in terms of what happens to your queer identity, basically. If you identify as queer, specifically, which is, among other things, not straight, what happens to that identity? Is it, like, queer with heterosexual? Or how then do you kind of, I guess the one question is, like, how then do you maintain that identity in a heterosexual context? And I don't really have an answer to that, but I do agree it's more than who you're with or who you're dating or who you're hooking up with, for sure.
And what is that moreness? You know, that's the thing, that's a good question. Know. And maybe we should have had someone on that was, like, hardcore steadfast about, like, their sexuality category.
Yeah, that would have been useful.
Yeah. I feel like we'll probably agree. Maybe a little,
you know what?
Less so. What?
We were supposed to have a guest on, actually, which I forgot about.
I know,
because she's
maybe
in Montreal.
Oh, yeah. She'll have to come on another one.
Yes. Oh, damn it. Now I feel bad. We'll have to edit this part out.
No, we're going to just keep it in.
So
we were going to have a guest.
Okay, we were going to have a guest, but our guest is in Montreal. And we were supposed to do it another time, and then, like, things got canceled.
Because of me.
Whatever. Yeah. Sorry, everyone. Okay. Anyways. Back to queerness. Yeah, that would have been useful to have someone who's steadfast in their identity. That would have been a great thing. But, yeah, I don't know what that otherness is. I mean, I think that that comes back to this notion of, like, what is a sexual identity in general?
Yeah.
And identity politics, and what are all the things that come along with being something queer or whatever. Is it sort of what you're wearing, how you think about things, how you relate to others, who you're attracted to? And, you know, of course, even if you approach it in just this really basic way of it's who I'm attracted to, being attracted to people doesn't necessarily stop, even if you are in a monogamous relationship. So if, you know.
Yeah, and what are about those zones, like those times of day when you're not attracted to anybody?
Yeah.
I mean, if we can easily boil it down to, like, who you're attracted to, but if, like, the majority of your time is spent not attracted to anybody in a day, how do you quantify that? And why is it so easy to be like, oh, I'm attracted to this group of people?
Yeah. So, complicated.
Complicated, yes.
So then, I guess as a follow-up question that I have is, like, when you are basically, if you are in a hetero relationship and you identify as queer, or I guess if you are in a gay relationship and identify as not gay, how then do you, is there a utility in communicating that to others? How do you do that? Why would you need to do that?
What?
Like, I guess what I meant was when, as a queer identified person, when I've been in heterosexual relationships, I felt the need to disclose my queer status sometimes or maintain or preserve parts of that identity.
Yeah.
Because I feel like they can easily slip away. And so then, like, what's the deal with that? Like, how would you maintain the identity? Is it even important to maintain the identity if you are, like, actively cultivating that?
I think it's important politically, especially for people who date both men and women, yeah, but happen to be in a heterosexual relationship.
Right.
To state it, because people, you know, bisexuality, or that form of queerness is one of those things that people don't really think exist. Yeah. And like, of course they're in a heterosexual relationship,
yeah,
now.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And so that's something in particular that you really, that some people really have to, like, hang on to.
Yeah.
To make sure that, not just to make sure that it stays for themselves, but to make a statement that, like, just because you're in a heterosexual relationship doesn't mean anything about the way you identify.
Well, yeah, and perhaps that's a great point, and perhaps that's why this kind of question becomes very relevant. Like, you know, does it make you heterosexual if you're in a heterosexual relationship? I mean, the answer is, of course, for the person, no, but in the eyes of many people, yes.
Yeah.
And so then it does become about sort of, like, not necessarily proving a queerness, or but really staking a claim to it, because your identity is so mismatched with what's being projected onto you so actively by others.
Yeah.
And so then you kind of, then you are kind of called to task of, like, well, define what the queerness is other than who you're currently sleeping with, because who you're currently sleeping with or dating is like, you know, whatever. It's a straight relationship. And so I don't know. I think that it's like a weird process of reconciling that and kind of feeling like you have to stake these claims all the time and create this, like, you know, like put your, like, make this territory that you don't really necessarily feel that you have to do when you're in a gay relationship or single.
Mm-hmm. I think this question also brings up, if there are different forms of love based on sexuality, like, is hetero love different from gay love? And that's very easy to be like, no, you know, it's all the exact same thing, but there are all these different things that are different. Like, queer narratives are different, queer desires, queer aesthetics, and kind of like, so when you are in a hetero relationship, are you loving differently than if you were in a queer relationship?
Wow, what a big question.
Yeah, I mean, don't answer it.
Yeah, no, I don't, I definitely don't have the answer. I just think that that's a huge and really interesting question to ask. And, like, I would really like to hear from, like, a lot of people about that, basically. It'd be a really interesting thing to, like, listen to a lot of queer-identified or bisexual people and talk about, like, qualitatively, like, what is that love like for them, and does it actually change? And why do you think, not that it's not relevant, but, like, why do you think that that comes up for you when we're asking questions about how to kind of, why, like, stake queer, your claim to a queer identity when you're in a heterosexual relationship? Like, what about that surfaces for you?
Oh, are you asking me?
Yeah, you.
Oh, I don't know. I don't understand your question. I know, I thought you were maybe talking to the audience or something. I don't understand your question.
I guess I'm just kind of curious as to, like, where, well, I guess I'd just like you to expand more on this thought around, like, if, like, are you kind of pointing to the idea that, like, people think that, like, that love is different, or that love is experienced by differently by queer people depending on who they're with, and that's something that they need to articulate when they're in a heterosexual relationship to others, or accommodate in their identity in some way?
Yeah, I mean, all sorts of things. Really just, like, what the fundamental relationships. I think it's very easy for people to say, like, it doesn't matter to me if it's a woman or a man or a trans person. I'd still love. Love is still the same. But is that love, maybe it's the same basis, but is it experienced differently?
Yeah.
And differently, not uniquely per individual, but uniquely per sexuality, identity category. And if there's a common narrative there.
Yeah.
But we should probably move on to the
Well, that's
the
a
show.
Great segue
oh,
to
thank
Orange
you.
Is the New Black.
Great.
Where the character Piper...
Mumble.
Sorry.
Gotta speak.
Where the character Piper has a... different relationships, one heterosexual relationship and one potentially queer relationship. And maybe we can explore whether or not those narratives are different, the way that her relationship with, what's his name, Jason Biggs?
Yeah, Jason Biggs is his character. Yeah. I don't know his character.
Oh, his name's Larry. The way relationship with Larry is that shaped and told differently than the way her... former and current relationship with Alex is shaped and told. Like, you know, we can even just, like, I even kind of just like to look at the flashbacks, because both her relationship with Alex and with Larry are told through flashbacks. Like, and then she has, like, current interactions with them, obviously. But, like, those aside, are those flashbacks in the narrative that's constructed for those relationships different in some way, and how are they different?
I think even it's said, I think, in the dialogue within the show, which is, like, if you want to settle down and be a boring couple,
yeah,
get with Larry. If you want to go out and do MDMA on a beach or whatever she said,
yeah,
you know, have that kind of new, exciting thing, get with Alex, which is basically like, if you want to be heterosexual and normal, get with the heterosexual relationship. And if you want to do exciting things, be queer. If you want to be different, be queer. I mean, that's boiling it down, like, very simply.
Yeah. And I think they might have been telling that kind of story. I would like to problematize that for a sec, though.
Sure.
Just because, like, I think that they are kind of shaping that story. And if it is constructing such a crude dichotomy of, like, heterosexual is plain, simple, normative, and gay or queer is fun, wild, crazy, irresponsible, free-falling kind of shit. Like, that can be, I think, a bit of an issue in and of itself. Like, can it not be, can it not be boring? Like, can being queer not be boring as well? Or can being heterosexual not be, like, ridiculous and trashy and messy? You know what I mean? And, like, so I think that if what the show's trying to, I mean, I know they're just kind of also just dealing with two characters. But if what the show's trying to do is, like, this is what's fun and wild and experimental, and this is what's safe and predictable, that is actually a really problematic representation of basically bisexuality, because the queer relationship then is treated as, like, an experiment or an exotic kind of, like, adventure, rather than, like, a legitimate, and albeit boring, but, like, a legitimate kind of pursuit in and of itself.
For sure. And it's Piper doesn't say that she's bisexual, so that's an important thing to note.
Yeah.
Is that she never had, or at least that I can remember, had any explicit sexual identity category label that she put on herself.
Yeah.
Other people put on lesbian or whatever. So that is something to keep in mind. And of course, like with all shows, it is dealing with just characters, but these characters are made from something, and there's certain narratives in which they are displayed and understood.
Right.
So, I mean, of course, we know that gay people can be boring, but I think that the show is positioning it in a particular way of having a queer affair be a fun, exciting thing.
Right.
And a little escape from heteronormativity.
Yeah, which is potentially... delegitimizes queerness, as an escapist behavior, basically, instead of, and, like, that's a really interesting thing, because, like, I think that the narrative is set up so that it looks like Like, I actually like the show, and I want us to actually spend some time talking about
Witch Yeah, I know. We just, like, jump into, like, the worst part.
Maybe I'm so hard on it, but you guys, the show is really great. But, it's very interesting because it sets up this, it kind of on the surface, and I think to me still, like, reads as, like, this really queer positive show that's, like, very queer. And, like, at first I was like, it's great because it's positioning the audience to want the queer relationship.
Yeah.
Instead of the hetero relationship. But that's kind of, like, it positions it because you always want, like, the lusty thing to have. Like, you yeah. know what I mean? Like, a traditional show, you always get, like, this, like, bloodlust for whatever it is.
Yeah. And no matter if, I mean, for the most part, no matter if it was a queer relationship on the side or if it was a hetero, we would probably be rooting for it. Because, yes. like, someone that you didn't meet and who's boring and didn't fall in love with in the show
yeah.
probably wouldn't care for it anyway.
Yes. So it kind of sets it up so that it, like, it makes the audience want that. And so then at first I was like, that's great because that thing is the queer thing. But on the other hand, it's also making you want that because you want the character to have, like, the escape or, like, the indulgence.
Yeah.
And so it does kind of treat the queer thing as, like, the fun experiment instead of, like, the legitimate. Like, they do have, like, moments where they're like, I hurt you and stuff like that. But it's much more, for me anyway, my reading and viewing of it was, like, it was much more about, like, the sexiness of the relationship than, like, their sweet. Like, there were, like, sweet moments, but that's not the climax of the show, right? Like, the climax of the show is not, like, when they're like, I hurt you. It's when they make out in, like, the temple.
The temple.
In that, like, chapel.
Yeah, and it also acts as, I think, as a little escape or desire for the audience who, you know, probably is majority is heteronormative. Or heterosexual, especially on something so mainstream as Netflix.
Yeah.
And it is a mainstream show.
Yeah.
That kind of, like, you get to root for someone to have queer desire because it will be over for you. Instead of actually having to deal with those issues in life. But yeah. Let's talk about some positive things about the show.
What
would
you like about the show?
I like that there are so many women. I mean, yeah. Lena Dunham actually just tweeted about it today.
Oh!
Not about the show, but she said, I think that there are, I'm paraphrasing, I think that there are more shows about killing women now than about women. And it's so true, all of these, like, murder shows and just really terrible acts of violence against women on television instead of, like, actually how women are living, is, yeah.
Very
it's bad. So it's so nice to see just, like, a group of women, and with this kind of, like, small town feel, like, there's something, you know, with quirky characters and, like, yeah. into their lives, which is kind of like Gilmore Girls or shows, like, about that small town community, which I don't think are on television, or at least there's none that I'm watching.
Yeah.
So that's really nice, as well as, obviously, let me go on. I have two more, at least, things to say that I really like about it. It's amazing, no matter what, to see queer love and, like, queer identities be on screen and
totally.
Kind of accepted, at least in the world that they're having, like, I forget her name, but the blonde one with braids.
Trish?
Trish, yeah. Or Trisha.
Yeah.
You know, her lesbian loves. I don't know, it's just nice to see. And the other thing I really liked about the show was Laura Prepon,
yeah.
who played Alex.
She's
who
just
I
really
always
attractive.
Yeah, I mean, I've never thought that she was before. I thought that she was always kind of annoying.
Yeah,
and everything
she
else she was. And
yeah.
so I was like, ugh, she's in this? And then she turned out to be so amazing as
yeah.
Alex. And, like, I don't know, really brought that character so much heart.
Yeah.
And, like, I root for her. And I want her to get with, I don't know her name or her actress's name.
Big hair?
Yeah, big reddish hair.
Shit, I forgot her name.
I want them to be together forever.
Yeah.
And both of them just did such amazing jobs.
It is interesting how much you do root for Alex. I root for Alex, too, more than I root for Piper, for sure.
Yeah.
And, You're right. She did bring a lot of heart to that character. I just want to add one, dovetail on one of the things you said for a sec about how there's so many women. It's not just for me. One of the reasons it's great from a feminist standpoint, because there's other things we can problematize. It's going to be like the inverse of a compliment sandwich. One of the things that's really great about it is not just that there are so many women and so many strong characters, but like a real, real concerted effort to create so many multifaceted women. Like, This flashback thing that they do with all these prisoners is sort of like, for me, a feminist act in and of itself, because it like constructs these narratives for each people. So they do have, like you said, this community feel where everyone's got their shtick, like, and everyone's kind of got like a character, but they have like told the stories of these women in like such an intentional way that like, I think a show that so actively tells women's stories and so many different women's stories is kind of inherently feminist for doing that.
Right.
So I think that's really great.
Yeah, and when that kind of usually happens is like, oh, let's reveal their past. But they're actually very surprising past, and they don't fit into, for the most part, like, very specific stereotypes.
Yeah.
Like, the transgender episode.
Yeah.
Which I was just, like, crying the whole way through. It was that so sad. That actor is
so good and makes me cry, like, and just makes me feel so bad for her.
But the kind of relationship, with her wife and with her son is, like, really touching and, like, trying to deal with, guy friends. You don't often see that portrayal of transgender on television.
No, that is one of the most wonderful things about the show, I think. Like,
Who's not just, like, a quirky sidekick, you know, who actually has, like, so much desire for changing stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, that wasn't well said, but, like, you know, a nice person.
Yeah, a nice person. Somebody you really sympathize for, and you really see them, like, wrestling with a lot of, like, things that are related, but also kind of separate from their transgenderedness. Like, you know, like the relationship that she has with her son, like that is of course related to her transition and all these events that happened around the transition, but it's also like such just like a general human issue and like,
yeah, like parents with their kid.
Yeah. And the way of like balancing, I think that what's nice is like the things that shows do wrong when they fuck up like queer representation is like they either make everything about queerness or nothing about the queerness and are like they're just a person.
Yeah.
And both of those are really annoying and stupid and wrong, like, you know, like, and I think what's nice about that narrative in particular is they do a really good job of like balancing that dialectic where it's like, yeah, human issues, yes, human issues integrated into this other context of their transgender identity.
That is so true. That's a really good point, because all of the characters, even like the B characters, you know, like, the woman who ended up finding the screwdriver and using it as a dildo, like, even her, there's so much more than just their queer identity.
Yeah.
And it's there, and it becomes part of the storytelling, their queerness, but it isn't, like, the only thing that happens.
Yeah, it's really true. So, good job, Orange is the New Black, on the queer front.
Yeah, pretty good.
I would like to transition over into some of the other, like, axes that it has been discussed. So, some writings on the interweb, which I may or may not cite later.
We'll see. We'll decide later.
Keep you in the dark. Have talked about how it deals with queerness really well, gender really well, race okay, and class very poorly. And I wanted to spend a couple minutes on that, on the race and the class stuff, and talk about, I guess, at least just open with, like, what do you think about how it deals with class and race?
I have read nothing about it.
Yep.
But, I mean, I can assume that people have talked about the race in that different racialized groups of people separate within it, and they call it, like, their tribes or something. In the show, they call it their tribes. And that's pretty weird. And also, I guess, like, there's the narrative of white naive woman coming to this whole new world and interacting with different classes and different racialized groups that she wouldn't have before. But usually what happens is that white person saves the day, but really she ends up conforming to, I don't know, the laws of the prison and, like, beating a white Christian girl to death.
Yeah.
Or not to death. Whoever. Who knows?
Probably not
how
to
much.
Death. But, yeah. Yeah, like, that's true. I don't think it follows with, like, the white person saving the day, but I do think it follows with, like, this, like, ethnocentric, like, white anthropologist model of, like, the white person going into, like, the jungle, so to speak,
yeah.
And, like, kind of, and not just the white, but the upper class person as
yeah.
well. Like, this is, like, the same problem, I think. And
like,
and,
upper middle class.
Yeah, and, like, kind of observing, like, the wildlife and trying to, like, do, like, the sort of, you know, locals do, basically,
mm-hmm.
and play that role. And, like, you could interrogate that and say, or, like, respond to it by saying, like, well, the fact that she beats up that woman at the end shows that she's trying to play, but she actually is.
Yeah.
But, like, I still think that there's, like, this whole, like, I think that what the real problem is, like, this, like, this, there's, like, a scopa, like, a scopophilic issue
yeah.
of, like, the fact that spectatorship is filtered through her eyes specifically, even though it tells these other women's stories. It's, like, well, why did we need the entry point to be this, like, white anthropologist, basically? And, like, you know, would it be so unreasonable that we would, and, like, even with Alex and the choice of, like, the characters that you do really feel for, like, you are positioned pretty much to feel for, like, the middle upper class white women
yeah.
way more than everybody else. Like,
yeah. And that is, I think that is just because we're following a white protagonist and she goes into the white group.
Yeah, it's true. But I think that, like, the choice of, like, basic, like, okay, so let me backtrack. One of the moments where I thought maybe they were nodding to this issue was when Larry's talking to the radio host and is saying, like, I would like us to cover this radio story. And the host is like, well, we wouldn't really cover your wife. We would cover someone who would typically be in prison,
hmm.
not you guys, because that's, like, a weird anomaly. And I thought maybe that's a nod because, like, there is the question of, like, why are we following this person and not somebody who's actually
okay.
in a prison system?
I think that... I heard that. I mean, it's been a few weeks since I saw the show, so maybe you're right. But I heard it as, like, they wouldn't typically interview him because he's not in prison.
Yeah.
But they
oh,
would
yeah,
interview
so.
Her because
oh,
she's
yeah,
actually
right.
the one in prison.
Yeah, maybe I just misinterpreted it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that could be the case. So then I like that even less because I thought that they were nodding to
yeah.
because there is this notion of, like, well, why would it be so unreasonable for us to align with another character? And, like,
yeah.
we do align with other characters, but it is through this sort of, like,
they're still
anthropological, like, watching
yeah.
them and, like, sort of watching them from a distance and observing their struggles and being like, oh, interesting,
yeah.
rather than seeing through their eyes way. And the only eyes that we really see through are Piper's and Alex's.
Yeah. That's definitely problematic.
Mm-hmm.
And I think obviously a large part of it is that it's based on, I don't know, Piper's last name, biography, autobiography. And, like, her life experiences.
Wait, this is based on a true story?
Yeah.
Whoa, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Oh. Well, now you do. So, she did all these things. She went to prison. She got out. And she marries Larry.
And, okay.
Real life story, that's what happens.
Okay.
I don't know if it's going to end the same way. Like, I don't know if she, like, beat someone up in prison, you know. Or
probably
if there was,
not.
Like, some even...
she probably also didn't have these sexual encounters.
I don't know. I haven't read it.
Mm.
But she did date a woman.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway. So, I think that's part of the reason why. I don't think that that necessarily, like, absolves it of anything. Because they're still choosing to make a film... I mean, make a TV series... following this specific
mm-hmm.
narrative,
mm-hmm.
When they could
yeah,
have,
like,
taken the base
it in,
of
like
it,
a more collective base,
yeah,
way.
And
yeah.
made it a different thing. But
yeah.
I do think it's fairly collective, more so than the average show. And I don't think a lot of shows would like having a non-protagonist-driven show because that doesn't
yeah.
really exist.
It doesn't fall into traditional narrative, like. I don't know.
Yeah.
Conventions.
Even Lost, which focused on different people every week, like, still had Jack as the main person carrying them through.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, that's true. So I'd say overall some problems, but we like it so far,
yeah.
it seems like.
It's good. I can't wait for more.
I can't
I wish
wait for
it wasn't
more.
Another year away.
I know. So that's one flaw with the Netflix posting everything at once system.
Yeah, because I just, like, watch it within 2 days.
Yeah, and then you
and
die
then,
inside. Yeah.
Loved it.
So, any particular narratives for you stand out? I liked Miss Claudette, personally.
Oh, yeah. No, I liked the transgender story. I don't even remember her name, so great. But that's really good. I also really liked big-haired woman with that kind of ginger who got with Alex. Mm-hmm. I think her real name's like Natasha Lyon.
Yes, that's correct. Lyon, actually.
Great. So her, I really liked her as a character. I thought she was so endearing and so kind of like funny, but strong and like grounded. I really liked her, and I liked her backstory too. It made me cry also when Red was taking care of her.
Yeah.
I liked Red because she was in Star Trek. She was like,
I didn't know that. Anyway.
She was the captain for, whatever, yeah. So, she was the first female captain, whatever.
So, powerful woman, both shows.
Yeah.
Okay, so I have actually a question that's related to a question we entertained about girls.
Okay.
So, one of the things that I heard men saying when Girls came out, stupidly, was
men.
That... Men.
Just
was
kidding,
that,
men.
Not kidding, men.
Just, you know, we're, you know,
okay,
let's try to be inclusive.
We're kind of kidding. Watch yourselves.
Yeah.
was basically this idea that, like, the show is hard for them to watch because they have no characters to identify with because only the women are multifaceted. And then
ooh,
I kinda,
good question.
Thanks. I'm not there.
And then I feel it coming on, so I want to, like, preemptively congratulate you.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I always kind of, like, rolled my eyes at that and said, well, like, that's what watching TV is like for women all the time.
Yeah.
But... You know, this question I think really, really applies to Orange is the New Black, and basically I wanted to explore, like, are the men multifaceted, or is this show really heavily biased towards a female eye? Is that a bad thing, if it is?
I don't think it's a bad thing if it is. I just want to point that out there, right away. And I think it is biased, like, I mean, it not biased, but it does have that, like, women eye perspective, and yeah. I think that's amazing, because I think we... put so much pressure on feminist art to be, like, perfect in every single way. We criticize it for gender so much more, for everything, race, class, everything more than we would a show by men.
Yeah.
I think...
Or about men, yeah.
About men, yeah. Because I don't think it's because we expect more, but I think generally we want...
We're so excited that it's there.
No, I'm not saying us. I'm saying
no,
society, like... Really?
But I think even us. Like, we just have more interrogation of feminist work.
Yeah, right.
Or work that could be... And I think part of it is that, like, society's shitty about it, but I think that the feminist community does, too.
Yeah,
and
totally.
And it's because they get so excited that it's there, but they decide to apply all of their, like, scholarship to, like, critiquing and interrogating it, which is, like, maybe we shouldn't be having this podcast episode. Maybe we should be podcasting on True Blood.
Well...
Anyway.
There's a difference between critiquing it and putting it down.
You're right, yeah. You're talking about putting it down.
Yeah, and I'm talking about putting it down. We put down a lot of women, either work that they've done or work about women, just to make it seem like another frivolous thing. Like, thank God we still have the norm of men-focused things.
Yeah.
Just another way of being really hard on women. I forget where I was going. What was the question?
If it's treating men differently than women,
oh, right.
And if that's bad.
So I think it's great. Obviously, we are getting way more into the women's backstories. Awesome. I think it's treating men pretty okay.
I think it's treating them largely as villains. as villains.
Well, you know, the guy from The Wire with the porn stash, but I guess they call him porn stash. You know,
he
was a villain.
He's a douchebag in The Wire, too.
I loved him in The Wire. He was a douchebag.
The guy who would just show up and yell at everyone.
No.
Who was he in The Wire?
He was Ziggy's brother. And
oh, no, he wasn't a villain at all. Oh, no, he was so good in The Wire. I thought he was, there's this character on The Wire, everyone, who's, like, really, like, not even a B, but, like, a D character, but he's just, like, a white cop, and he's got, like, a ponytail or, like, a mullet or something, and he's just, like, always the cop that just, like, yells at kids and is horrible and, like, really racist, and you don't really see any plot points with him, he's just around and is bad.
Right.
And I thought that's who he was.
Yeah, no, not that guy.
Okay.
Yeah, but he kind of turns around, like, he was very villainous, and then he feels a little bit of love, and then he's like, who, fuck my job, you know, I want love instead, when we see this guy take...
Does that make you sympathize, though?
Yes.
I don't know, I still think he's, like, think about the things he's done, he's horrible.
Yeah, I know, I'm not saying that it absolves him of terrible things that he's done, but I think it's made him a bit more of a multifaceted character,
yeah.
Other than being, like, a one, you know, he just... is the worst person ever. You kind of get a little bit more into his life.
Right.
And, you know, the boringest storyline of all time that I wish wasn't in there is that love between the prison guard and the
Yeah, it's Spanish stupid. It makes no sense. Like, when did it happen? When did it start? Like, whatever.
Yeah, whatever. Why even have it? But,
And it's just trouble. You know? This pregnancy thing, it's just not going to work out.
Yeah.
They're going to get caught. I just mean, like, whatever.
But he's, you know, has been portrayed as sweet and sensitive and caring, but then and also kind of, like, yeah, and injured, but also worried about his job, and then kind of is like, you know, abort, let's get rid of it. You know, he can be a jerk, too.
And he definitely, in that relationship, well, it's interesting because they are an anomaly, then, so I want to talk about all the treatment of all the men other than him, and then that relationship.
Okay.
So, I guess I'm going to start with... No, I'll just talk about... I'll start with the treatment of all the other men. I think all the other men are kind of set up as villains. Like, Larry, not as a villain, but as an antagonist in a way. Like, he's working against the narrative direction that you want it to go in.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like, the narrative can go one of two ways, and you want it to go the way that he's pushing against. And Healy, totally, as well, is stopping or preventing the narrative from moving where you want it to.
Well, he also makes bad things happen.
Like, I don't mean like he's not pushing the narrative forward. Like, he is, but he's like, he's the person who's inhibiting or preventing or thwarting our protagonist, right?
Yeah, and I'm just pointing out even more that he is an antagonist because he is making bad things happen, like going on a public radio show and saying all these things that Piper said to him in confidence.
Yeah. And Healy, obviously, is doing a lot of bad shit. And then obviously Mendez is like totally treated as a villain for most of it and turns around, I guess. But none of those characters are even remotely as multifaceted as even the B-list women, I think. Like Larry, you only see him really experiencing things in relation to Piper and talking about Piper or wrestling with Piper issues or dealing with that even implicitly.
Well, there was a time when he was trying to... write a thing about
edging.
Some masturbation
which was a
thing,
funny plot point. But
that's the thing, and he was trying to do his life in a different way, and then he went to the editors, and they were like, this other thing, this other woman, she's way more interesting than you are, why don't you try to bank on her? And so he, like, had to make his life about her.
Yeah.
In order to, you know, it's making him get on this American Life ripoff show, and that's amazing for him.
Yeah, but yes, it's true. But, like, the way, like, from a meta perspective, like, the way he's set up is pretty much he's anchored to her.
Both well, his why career, have but, like, a, why have a character that's not involved in the plot?
I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just saying, like, you know, that's typically the way women are treated in other shows. And so, just by virtue of that, he just has less... Like, because it's not like the prison characters are anchored to her in that way, and so he just has, like, less, he has less definition on his own, and he has less layers. Like, he really does, Healy has very few, I think, like, is not as multifaceted. We don't see the backstories of prison guards, and, like, I guess they're trying to give the guard that's in love, like, some backstory, because he's, like, doesn't have a leg, and blah, 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 blah. But anyway, I want to come back to them anyway. So
I
the point
think Larry's not very multifaceted.
What
I think
do you think?
He is.
What are
kind
why
of,
how?
I think that you see him wrestling with decisions.
That's true.
And I think that is, you know, one of the biggest points of having a well-defined character is not just being like, immediately I'm going to do this because this is my archetype, but being like, I'm actually torn between these things. I'm trying to, like, talk to other people, I'm trying to have a career, but I'm kind of getting wrapped in this thing that's happening with my fiancé. Do I want to be her with her? Kind of. Do I not? You know, all of these questions are happening, and he deals with them.
But I kind of think that he is, even though those are questions he's wrestling with, he's easily pushed around on them.
He has one meeting with Alex
where she's like, yeah, she's crazy. And he's like, yeah, I'm going to call off my engagement and not be with this person anymore because she's totally crazy. After like a 5-minute convo.
Yeah, for sure.
So like, it's still like, yeah, he wrestles with decisions, but he still is moved around by the women in the narrative.
Totally.
And, which is great in a lot of ways because that is women in every other show.
Yeah.
Like, even if they're wrestling with decisions, they're just pushed around by other people in the
narrative.
Right,
yeah, there are other people telling them what decisions. Yeah. So parents versus, like, inmates.
Yeah, exactly. Or just, like, what do your friends say? And then they have, like, an epiphany that doesn't really make sense, and then they act on that. Like, so he's still kind of, like, a free-floating agent that, like, bumps off of everyone else instead of moves on his own accord.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't think that's a bad thing because, like I said, it's great to reverse those roles because, again, every time women watch television, that's who they are supposed to be identifying with.
But also, isn't that, like, how people make decisions anyway? You know, I think that we often get so into protagonists that are like, I'm going to do everything on my own and every decision and I'm so strong individually. But really people are like,
I make a Venn diagram.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
Well, exactly. I make lists and like, you know,
no,
I talk
true,
to friends
like,
and I talk to my parents and
it's true, but it's not something, I don't know.
I'm saying that's not a fault of the show. I'm saying that's not a fault of you film narratives.
Right. Yeah. And I'm not really criticizing the show so much as just like making the point that I think,
it's a good point, the reversal,
Well, I guess what I would say is, like, most of the characters in the show, if they're bumped around or moved around by anything, are moved around by the other women or by their history.
Yeah.
And Larry is solely moved around by women in the show in the present moment.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So he's less historically contextualized, which automatically, for me, gives him less layers. And I don't think it's bad writing, I think it's great.
Yeah.
And so there's that. And so I do think the men kind of have less agency in the way, or you see an active power struggle between the women and the men, where kind of like the women lose on the surface, but there's a lot of subversion there, like with Healy.
Who's Healy?
Healy's the guy who runs the prison who's like a huge dickhead.
Hates lesbians.
He hates lesbians, right. And his whole, like, lesbian paranoia is a really funny and great plot point.
Yeah.
but anyway, but the guard and the girl who's pregnant, whose name I forget, sorry, they are a shitty narrative because he does have power, and it's the one heterosexual interaction in the show that, like, really doesn't do much for women. And, like, treats that female character like such a fucking idiot.
Well, it also is just like, this is love, but really it is actually what they said, sexual harassment.
Yeah.
And he would be a rapist.
Yeah.
And maybe we're taking all agency away from the woman here, because she does seem to want to be with him and love him. But it also is, like, he has a lot of power over her.
Yeah.
And, there are laws for a reason.
Yeah.
Am I right?
Yeah.
I sounded so, like, conservative, being like, there are laws for a reason.
Yeah, you did.
Because I don't think that there are.
But he does have a lot of power, and that, like, the way I think they treat her pregnancy, where she's like, I want to keep it, and he's like, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
There's no way this is gonna work, kind of thing, like, treats her as, like, very, first of all, it, like, kind of sets up the audience to want her to get an abortion, which is an interesting and kind of strange thing, but it also treats her as, like, really stupid or naive for making choices about her body. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think it positions her so that he's, like, this rational thinker and she's, like, an emotional thinker, which is, like, throwing these people right back into old heterosexual tropes, which so much of the rest of the show is working and to undermine.
Yeah, I kind of saw it the opposite. Like, I saw her thinking with her head and him just being like, well, what are we going to do? We just have to get rid of it. You know, let's just get rid of this problem and very emotional and not coming out of it from a rational perspective. Because that was her first immediate reaction, too.
Right.
And then she was like, talked to her mom about it and was like, oh, I actually do want to keep this child, not thinking emotionally. And it is like, it's interesting to see pregnancy as the hard thing to do. Because usually in TV shows, it's like, abortion is the hardest thing to go through in the whole world.
Yeah.
And here it's like, the problem is actually the pregnancy.
Yeah.
That's the difficult decision.
Yeah, no, I think that that's true. And I think you're right. But I do feel like, I don't know. I felt like the audience, like, I don't align with the guard, but I do think the audience is set up to align a little with him.
Yeah,
and
me too.
Want her to have an abortion.
Yeah.
And to have thoughts like, it doesn't make sense, or, like, he's going to get in trouble. And, like, these are, for me, like, rational mind thoughts.
Yeah.
So that's why I kind of was thinking, like, his sort of being like, let's get rid of it, even though he's being emotional, is sort of, like, positioning him in this, like, male agentic, like, well, business will be bad if you do this.
Yeah, totally.
And you kind of stick to the home, like, you want to stick to the home, you, like, woman kind of way. So it's not that, like, she wants to keep the baby that I think is bad, it's the treatment of it. And
he said it in the most dickish way.
Yeah.
Which is, like, you know, you have to be like, what do you want to do when you talk to whatever, your woman partner?
Yeah, your woman.
Your woman partner. I'm trying to stop saying female.
Why? Oh.
For, like, trans politic reasons.
Okay.
You know, disconnect female bodies from woman identities. So instead of saying female protagonist, I'll say woman protagonist. Because it doesn't matter that they have, like, female parts, but it's that their gender identity is categorized as woman.
I see.
Anyway, just a little tidbit into my new
little sidebar
of what I'm working on.
So yeah, that relationship, I think we can agree, is the shittiest.
Yeah, and I think something...
And it's racialized like crazy.
Oh yeah, totally. So. Yeah, it's a bummer plotline.
Hear us, Orange is the New Black? You hear us?
I think the whole internet thinks so. I mean, based on having not read it, I just assume that they think so too.
I want to actually bring one more thing up about the internet, now that you've thought of it. Okay. You have a thought you wanted to add?
Yeah, but it's not about the internet, so go ahead.
Why don't you add yours then?
Okay. I just wanted to point out that we're on a feminist podcast here, and we haven't once pointed out that all of these women are imprisoned by men.
Okay. Right? Yeah. Sure.
I wanted to, like, make that super clear. And when the one woman is in charge, like, when the one woman prison guard, she's, like, nice and wants to, like, help
a huge
people.
Idiot. Yeah.
I didn't see her as a huge idiot. I saw her as, like, she actually cared about people.
Yeah, no, she's the best.
Yeah. She was sweet and funny.
Strangled and mutilated.
Like, yeah, that's true.
So, yeah. And... Anyway, I, when I say treated as an idiot, I mean, like, it's sort of, like, people being, like, you're not mean enough, and then she goes and tries to be mean and, like, botches it, right? And then, like, gets hurt, and it's sort of, like, well, she was mean to the wrong person. She didn't have the savvy that the guys do.
Yeah.
Should have, like, you know, whatever.
The rules are in place.
Shouldn't have tried to be a man. Should have just kept being a woman, like, kind of thing. Yeah, so I think that that's great, and I think that also... We probably don't have time to talk about it, so maybe I shouldn't get into my internet question.
Well, I think you should anyway.
Well, okay. I won't, but one more thing. I think that Orange is the New Black presents a lot of opportunity for thinking about what it means to subvert something because of this point of, like, the fact that, like, ultimately the women are oppressed. In this show, they are imprisoned by men and regulated and policed by men. So there's, like, this really, really overt power, like, differential, but then there's so many large subversions and revolts within that, and shifts in power, and, like, really speaks to the fluidity of power dynamics, and, like, I think could be a great place if somebody was interested in subversion on television and stuff like that, like, a great, really explicit, obvious place to start working.
I think that it's great, that... Usually when you think about women's history, it's in women prison, you're like, constant oppression, you know, they had no agency, they can't do anything. Yeah. That's the way that it's framed in history books. That's often the way it's portrayed in media. But here, as much as they are literally oppressed, they do have agency and they have ways of relating to each other and gaining little bits of power.
Yeah.
And, you know, just being agentic people. Being people, really. Usually you think of women in history as, like, cattle.
Yeah.
And just being moved around.
Yeah.
So but here, you know, it's that kind of, that way that you can still have agency without being the power authority over all things.
Yeah, totally. Which is great. I mean, I just think, like, it's very nice to see, like, such fluidity and power represented, because that's really how power actually, I think, operates.
And different levels of power, not that there's just this one.
And, like, up and down and across. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
So the thing I wanted to say about the internet, which isn't really that related, but I was thinking about Lena Dunham recently and how, you know, season one of Girls was really criticized for being super white. And then Lena Dunham was like, okay, guys, I'll address it in season two. And then had like that scene
with Jamie, yeah, like two episodes. Donald
Glover. and I was thinking about how, like, I was curious to see whether or not Orange is the New Black responds to all the criticism of how it deals with class in its next season.
What is
season.
The criticism of the class?
Just sort of what we mentioned and, like, who, like, I don't know. I haven't read it all, but, like, my understanding so far is just kind of, like, this idea of, like, who the story's being told, who we're really aligning with and why and how the treatment of lower class people are, like, they're on a hierarchy still in terms of, like, the how fleshed out the characters are and who you're aligning with and whatnot.
Right.
So I was kind of wondering whether or not they're going to respond to that in their next season. And I was just sort of thinking lately about how, I guess, one really, really great thing about these recent shows that are kind of women's shows, like Orange is the New Black and Girls, is, like, there feels like a community of people on the internet and writers directly responding to, like, the criticisms of their audiences or, like, the points made by their audiences, which is something that the internet has given us, but also seems to be much more specific to kind of queer and, like, feminist slanted shows. Because, for example, like, if people were like, hey, I hope next season in Mad Men there's more Betty, like, Mad Men doesn't give a shit what, like, the forum on, like, Reddit or whatever. You know what I mean?
I don't know,
like,
because there's a lot of shows like the Sons of Anarchy creator, Matthew Weiner, definitely is very outspoken on the internet.
Oh, okay.
And so, like, I'm not sure if they're taking criticism. You know, I'm not sure if they're doing, like, what Lost did and kind of, like, listening and responding and giving the people what they say that they want.
Yeah.
But they're definitely a presence on the internet. Same with the creator of... Oh, never mind.
Yeah, well, I guess my main point, I mean, whether or not it's gendered or not, like, that... Maybe it's not. But my main point is just, like, I'm really happy about that, and I just sort of have been noticing lately that there's, like, an interaction now between the creators of a big work and the audiences that's become more pronounced with shows like Girls, especially being like, I'll fix that, guys, like, that kind of stuff. And I just think it's really, really nice and feels like a new thing. And, like, is now writing and the creation of work, even big mainstream television, feels like a more collaborative process.
Yeah, I have very mixed feelings
process.
Because I think that it does kind of boil down shows to the showrunner, you know, this one genius behind the show, when really that there's, like, a whole bunch of writers, a whole bunch of directors, a bunch of people working on the show, but really it's like, oh, this one person made the show. It's just Lena Dunham, like, making this show. Let's talk to her directly. And that kind of auteurship view, I really hate.
But why does online criticism do anything about that?
Because it targets that one person to talk to, and as that one person as the subject to be talked about.
Maybe, but, like, it's also, that's true, it does do that, but any kind of scholar criticism does that, and, like, even, like, it's not like people were, like, just tweeting, like, hey, Lena Dunham, please put this in Girls. It was, like, Feministing would write an article about Girls, the show, and why they don't like the racial representation in it.
Yeah, but it's hard to think that you can do change. Like, people think that they could really reach out to Lena Dunham, maybe because she was on Twitter, you know, and you could just tweet anything at them. Whereas it's hard to do that when it's just, like, a group of people or a corporation making a something. You don't feel like you could, like, tweet AMC and be like, hey, can you change?
Yeah, that'd be funny. Hey, I found this problematic. Could you rectify this? That'd be great. So you don't like it?
Well, and also, it's kind of done things like with Lost, to use another example of Lost, is it's kind of been cited as one of the pitfalls of the writers.
One of the things that ruined the show.
Yeah, it really is, of taking too much advice from, like, the internet forums. Instead of being like, okay, you know, let's stay focused and condensed and just talk to each other.
True. Yeah, I guess one of the things, I think that those are all really good points in terms of, like, what it does to the quality of television, etc. One of the things I like from it from a more theoretical standpoint is it kind of accommodates this notion of, like, multiple authors.
And I think it does the opposite, and as I just said with, like, the auteurship.
I think it does in a way, but it also creates, like, it's sort of like what, if you all remember our fan fiction episode, where, like, audiences are consuming culture and then, or, like, consuming media content and then kind of creating their own narratives around it, and how that can be a feminist act in and of itself, or maybe a colonialist one, thanks for the last minute. So maybe a feminist act. Like, I think that audiences critiquing and then having a direct impact on a show could be conceptualized in a similar way. Or maybe the opposite.
Yep.
What do you think, audiences? Sound off in your comments. Next time on a podcast with Winone, maybe we'll talk about body hair like we said we would weeks ago this week. Oh, or maybe we won't.
Yeah, maybe.
We clearly don't do what we say.
Well, I forgot that we were even going to do that.
Yeah, we might talk about, I don't know, like, I feel like we should go to the movies soon and, yeah, like, see something, and yeah, then we'll talk about that.
Seems like there's nothing good in the movies.
Should right we look now it up right now on Cinema Clock and yeah see what it's
I think it's, like, the Wolverine.
Yeah, it's going to be 7 p.m. AMC.
I would like to
see
there
the Wolverine.
I would too, but I feel like it's going to be bad.
I watched a trailer today for Catching Fire.
And oh my god!
So great! Exciting. I can't wait!
Yeah, well, I mean, at least we'll for sure be doing Catching Fire. Check us out in November.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we also saw Francis Ha.
Oh,
it
yeah
sucked.
Yeah.
Very wooden, sucked, didn't mean hollow anything. Very superficial.
Yeah.
That's
done
our thoughts about that.
Bye!
Yeah. Bye! Is that really it? That's how we're ending it? It's like Francis Ha sucks. Think of all the roads. Think of all the crossings. Taking steps is easy. Standing still is hard. Remember all their faces. Remember all their voices. Everything is different.